to case number 8, Luster v. Astrew. Mr. Schultz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Barry Schultz on behalf of the plaintiff, Angela Luster. In this case, the plaintiff really makes two main arguments. The first is that the administrative law judge rejected the treating physician's opinion and rejected the plaintiff's credibility, finding that the clinical and diagnostic testing did not support the alleged limitations. Yet in this case, as plaintiff pointed out, Ms. Luster suffers from some 19 separate diagnosed conditions. Given that fact, there is no support in the record for the administrative law judge's finding that the diagnostic testing did not support the alleged limitations. This is an unusual case, Social Security case, because on this record, the ALJ did not rely on any medical opinion to support his findings. Usually there's a state agency doctor's checklist form indicating what limitations could reasonably be expected from the medical evidence, or there's a medical expert's testimony concerning the same.
The medical impairment reports, who were they done by?
In this case, by Dr. Razak, who was the primary treating physician for Ms. Luster. Physical impairments.
There were six reports altogether.
Yeah, there is a report from Dr. Sammy. The plaintiff's not relying on that report for this appeal because there were no underlying treatment notes, and he was a psychiatrist.
So the other two mental assessments, as well as the physical assessments, were all done by her family physician, am I right?
No. There was Dr. Sammy, who's the treating psychiatrist. Then the other mental assessments were done by government consultant doctor and the government state agency doctor.
That's what I'm getting to. So there were mental assessments.
That's correct.
That were done by state agency doctors.
That's correct.
Okay.
What plaintiff is relying on in this case, however, is the ALJ's rejection of the physical limitations for which there's no medical assessment by anyone except for Dr. Razak.
Well, what role do the mental assessments play in the overall determination, in your view?
Well, to the extent that Dr. Razak took depression into consideration, finding that it would perhaps enhance or exacerbate the claimant's experience of her physical limitations, they play a part. But Ms. Luster is not alleging that she's disabled just based on her mental impairment, but really based on the combination of impairments.
The
combination of impairments, that's correct. And only Dr. Razak considered the combination of impairments in presenting an opinion as to whether or not the claimant could function. I mean, this court has held on many occasions that administrative law judges have to build a logical bridge between the evidence and their conclusion. Where you have multiple physical impairments and diagnostic testing for those and no medical opinion as to what limitations could reasonably be expected from those impairments, the ALJ has to have something to come up with his findings, such as in this case that Ms. Luster could lift 20 pounds for one-third of a workday. How would the ALJ, not being a medical person, know that without some either relying on the plaintiff's testimony, but she testified she could only lift 10 pounds, or relying on daily activities, but in this case her daily activities were minimal and don't suggest that she could lift more than 10 pounds, or some medical opinion that the combination of impairments does not support the claimant's alleged limitations. But in this case, the only medical report based on the physical impairments is Dr. Razak, who said the claimant could lift less than 10 pounds and work only 4 hours per day in a work day. In fact, I believe that in this case, under Social Security, the regulation 20 CFR 416.927, Dr. Razak's opinion is entitled to controlling weight because it's uncontradicted in this record and it is supported by significant diagnostic testing. Now, the commissioner, in his brief, suggests...
Can you elaborate just a little bit about that? What diagnostic testing does support the attending's view?
Yes, Your Honor. There's x-rays of the feet which document hypertrophic bone disease as well as deformities in the feet. There is evidence of moderate left ventricular hypertrophy. There's diagnostic evidence of renal cysts, of a tortuous aorta, documented evidence of an abdominal aneurysm, and the obesity is documented throughout the record as well. There's MRI evidence of the brain showing small vessels, cerebrovascular ischemic disease. So there's quite a bit of documented evidence, and there's really no way for the ALJ to know what would that combination of impairments reasonably be expected to, and what limitations could reasonably be expected from that combination of impairments. Only a medical person could really make that kind of determination. The other argument the plaintiff raises in this case is that four separate doctors, the treating psychiatrist, Dr. Razak, state agency mental health specialist, as well as a consultative psychologist, all provide opinions that Ms. Luster is limited in her ability to handle work stress. It ranges from moderately limited in the ability to handle work stress to no ability to handle work stress. The administrative law judge does not assess that evidence. He does not include any limitations in handling work stress in his residual functional capacity assessment or finding, and he's required to do that. Again, that same ruling or the same regulation requires that ALJ's
conclusion as to what kind of work she could do, he appears to take that into consideration, doesn't he? Puts her in a situation where she's doing work that does not expose her to the public, has fairly minimal contact with other coworkers.
Yes, he does that, and he says it's simple, unskilled work, but as we pointed out, there is case law as well as Social Security ruling 8515 that says unskilled work can be as stressful as skilled work. So there needs to be some analysis as to how the stress actually impacts a plaintiff. In this case, the ALJ found that Ms. Luster could perform factory work. That's the only work that he found. Well, factory work tends to have high production quotas. Often that's very stressful for people. And there was no analysis of how the stress impacts Ms. Luster and her ability to work. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Gurin.
May it please the Court. Thank you, Your Honors. This Court has long held that an ALJ is not required to discuss every single piece of evidence in the record. In this case, Ms. Luster is encouraging the Court to find that the ALJ's decision should be reversed on the basis of such evidence as a one-time finding that she had calluses on her feet, on the basis of the fact that she twice over the course of about 3 years complained of fatigue, and on the basis of gout, which was actually never diagnosed and was discussed only briefly as a possible diagnosis. We've discussed all the other factors, the other 19 factors that Mr. Schultz alluded to in our brief. I believe that this is an attempt to avoid the more important issue, which is that Ms. Luster has the burden of demonstrating that she's disabled and that she has, in particular in this case, that she has limitations greater than those found by the ALJ. Now, she argues that Dr. Razak, her treating physician, is entitled to controlling weight. The ALJ explained in great detail why he was rejecting Dr. Razak's opinion. Dr. Razak, incidentally, essentially said that Ms. Luster was bedridden half the day. The ALJ pointed out that Dr. Razak's own treatment notes provided no support for the limitations that he was stating. And furthermore, the other treatment notes in the record demonstrated that she had strong muscle strength, she had no atrophy, no swelling, her neurological testing was normal. Now, see, ALJ's obligation...
That's true, though, in a great number of fibromyalgia patients.
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
That is true in a great number of fibromyalgia patients.
Yes, Your Honor. And the ALJ credited the extremely sparse evidence of fibromyalgia in this case. However, as this court has found and stated on several occasions, fibromyalgia is not per se disabling. In fact, it's not usually disabling. The ALJ, we must remember, did include a rather extreme RFC limiting her to a limited range of light work.
I'm concerned about the ALJ's concern for or assessment of her pain. He doesn't seem, at least to me, to place a great deal of give it a great deal of weight.
Well, the ALJ, among other things, had to evaluate her allegations of pain, and the ALJ did point out that, again, the evidence in the record didn't seem to support much in the way of pain. The other factor that he considered that Ms. Lester has not addressed in either her initial or reply briefs is the function of drugs in this case. Ms. Lester denied at the hearing that she had been taking, that she was found positive for taking cocaine and was actually removed from a pain therapy program. She later was given the opportunity to obtain pain therapy. In fact, it was soon after that. She went to a pain therapist and was informed that she would not receive treatment until she underwent a program. In other words, she wouldn't receive narcotics right away. She declined the treatment. She decided that her pain wasn't so bad that she could, that she required treatment that didn't give her drugs. And the ALJ also noted. And
this addiction was from pain-killing drugs, is that right?
I'm not sure that it was established that there was an addiction, but the evidence demonstrates drug-seeking behavior. I think that would be a fairer characterization of it. But that was a significant component of the ALJ's analysis of her allegations of pain, was he had to assess her credibility, which, of course, is the ALJ's function. Regarding, I'd like to address briefly Mr. Schultz's comment that there was no medical opinion supporting the ALJ's decision. Now, there was no medical opinion that actually set forth the limitations that the ALJ found, but this court has held that the ALJ does not have to base his opinion on his RFC finding on a particular doctor's opinion. What the ALJ did was review the medical evidence, which again showed a lack of muscle atrophy, there was good muscle strength, no swelling, normal neurological functioning, and it's Ms. Lester's burden, not the ALJ's burden, to come forward and show that she could not perform the range of light work that the ALJ found. Now, regarding the issue of stress, I think it's important to recognize that the ALJ rejected the opinions, as we've already discussed, of Dr. Razak and Dr. Sami. Those were the two doctors who set forth extreme limitations in stress. In fact, the consultative examiner, Dr. Hish, found a mild limitation in stress, and the ALJ, as Your Honor suggested before, included limitations in his RFC finding that against driving, against interaction with the public and with other individuals, the jobs that the vocational expert identified were hand packager, assembler, and inspector. These jobs, I agree with Mr. Schultz, factory work is not necessarily unstressful, but I think it's important to recognize the very insignificant, minor, mild limitation of stress in this case.
Showed something in the order of going through these jobs, saying that essentially nobody would hire her with all those that string of maladies. Would that have some bearing on the whatever you want to call it, the combination analysis? Saying that they list these jobs, but there's no way she could do them. Nobody would hire her.
Well, I'm not sure. When
I'm talking about her burden, she comes forward with something. She's got this long list, some things I've never heard of, and this says, look, maybe if you isolate each one of them, but with all these together, it's just silly to say that I could do any of these jobs in the economy, even though they don't require a lot of skill.
I think there may be two questions here. One is whether she could perform the jobs described by the vocational expert. The other one is whether someone would hire her. And under the law, the second question is not significant. It's not a question that the administration has to address.
Don't have to prove that. So the jobs are there. Somebody doesn't hire her. That's
and the fact that she can perform them, that's the crucial issue, is that she can perform them. And, of course, the real bottom line here is whether the residual functional capacity found by the ALJ is supported by the evidence. If she can perform the tasks described by that RFC finding, then she can perform those jobs, a point that she has not disputed. The evidence as a whole supports the ALJ's decision, and we ask that the court affirm. And if you have no further questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Schultz, how much time?
Just as a matter of fact, that the record at page 126, Dr. Hischke actually states that the claimant is moderately limited in her ability to cope with routine work stress, not mildly limited, as Mr. Guerin suggested. In addition, no doctor suggested, none of the treating doctors suggested that Ms. Lester was engaging in drug-seeking behavior. That was something that the ALJ seems to have come up with on his own based on his own review of the record, but it's not something that's actually diagnosed or assessed by a treating physician. I think, the primary problem with the ALJ's decision is that Mr. Guerin, the commissioner, seems to think that the ALJ can't come up with their own residual functional capacity, even if there's nothing in the record that supports it. The ALJ is not a vocational expert or an occupational expert or a medical expert. So when you have a treating doctor saying the person can lift 5 pounds, work for 4 hours a day, and the ALJ rejects that opinion, the ALJ has to have something to rely on to find that, no, the person can stand and walk 6 hours a day and the person can lift 20 pounds. There must be something in the record, otherwise he's just making it up. Plaintiff suggests that that's what happened in this case. With no medical support for the ALJ's opinion, he decided in his own review of the evidence that this Ms. Lester could lift 20 pounds. We don't know how he could reach that conclusion. We request that this court reverse the decision of the ALJ. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Schultz. Thanks to both counsel.